League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Everyone loves football.
This is First and Ten. On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Bob Evans and Blue Emu. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow and Carla Dawson.
And good morning, everyone. Welcome into First and Ten, the show that's all things football. Although we should congratulate the Nationals on their big late-night win over the Dodgers, and, of course, the Cardinals in their win over the Braves.
Their first inning win over the Braves. Did you see that first
inning? Yeah, that
inning?
Was an amazing thing.
Oh, my God.
Can you imagine spending the money, getting all amped up, going into the stadium, all excited to see your team play, and then it's basically over after one inning?
I mean, I flipped it on when it was 5-0. I'm like, I thought the game just started. Yeah. The first inning, then literally I went upstairs to grab something, came downstairs, it was 10-0. I said, okay, I cannot leave the TV. This is too good. So I have a little bit of a baseball hangover, but I am always ready to talk football.
Well, I'm sitting next to Carla Dawson and behind the glass, Ron Culver, who
a
is soaking with the,
Ron
yeah,
Culver.
He's a sad Ron Culver. His Dodgers fell yesterday, a tumultuous game, and it did go late. I'm glad to see you up and bright and early this morning.
I barely made it, right? But it was worth it.
We also have a big Monday night football game coming up. It will be the Patriots and the Giants.
Thursday night. You're already to Monday.
Well, you know, night football to me is always Monday. I still hear the music.
You think Thursday's an imposter?
That Thursday's an imposter, but an imposter that I like very much. I know that's been a controversial topic, should there be Thursday night games, but I can tell you that it is great on Thursday night to go into a sports bar, to go into a restaurant, to go into wherever you're going, and to see the NFL at work.
And it kicks off the week. We're kicking off week six. So
kicks off
exciting.
Week six. And Patriots-Giants are an intriguing matchup for at least this reason. I mean, we are talking about one of the best teams against, obviously, a team that has struggled greatly. But I do look forward to seeing what Bill Belichick is going to do to Daniel Jones. It would always seem that Belichick has something special to confuse a rookie quarterback. And Daniel Jones will be up against a very tough Patriots defense.
Yeah, and he had a little bit of a reality check against Minnesota. He started out with that 2-0 start, and then Minnesota came a-calling. Kirk Cousins had a great game, and Daniel Jones had a little bit of a reality check. So last time the Giants beat the Patriots, 2011 Super Bowl, do they have it in him tonight?
All right, when we come back, we're going to get a chance to visit with Jason Sehorn, the long-standing cornerback of the New York Giants.
Former Trojan.
And we'll ask Jason, is Daniel Jones, or has he shown that he is the future franchise quarterback of the New York Giants? Jason Sehorn, when we return.
This is First and Ten on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Bob Evans and Blue Emu. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back to First and Ten. And joining us now on SB Nation Radio is Jason Sehorn, the longstanding top flight cornerback of the New York Giants. Jason, welcome to the show. You're on with David and Carla.
Good morning.
Fight on, Jason. It's great to have you in.
Oh, did you say fight on or right on?
Fight on. I'm a former Trojan.
Okay. I just had to put that in the proper context. Okay, I'm glad we're on the same page with that.
Yeah, she couldn't resist bringing that up. When she saw that in your profile, she was all
so
animated.
Excited. I already knew about him. I didn't need the profile. He's a famous Trojan.
Together?
Absolutely.
Especially now, I would hope.
Yeah, Clay Helton might need us, so we'll talk about that in a little bit.
Well, let's talk some Giants football. Giants, of course, in the big matchup tonight against the Patriots. Daniel Jones has been a heck of a story. He was booed when first drafted. Now he's been anointed the savior. What have you seen from him?
I mean, limited, you know, film in regular season games. I don't put a lot of context into what happens in the preseason because nobody's game planning. But what I've seen is a athletic, mobile guy, you know, who's got a good arm. going forward, how well does he read defenses? How well does he read, you know, in-game adjustments, things that are thrown at him? That's going to be the determining factor. It's not going to be his physical traits. It rarely ever is with a quarterback. I mean, most of them, when you're drafted, just say the first round, you have the tools to succeed. It's whether or not they can give you the knowledge to succeed. And I think with, you know, Daniel Jones, tools are there. I mean, against Tampa Bay, a couple of rushing touchdowns. I mean, to see a quarterback for the Giants run out of the pocket successfully, I just don't know the last time that happened. Because even before Eli, it was, you know, Kerry, and Kerry wasn't the most mobile guy in the world, but he looked fast, you know, for a QB. So that was impressive. So going forward, it's adjusting to the game. It's not, can he throw the deep ball? Can he hit people in stride? You know, can he just skip the pocket? No, it's how well does he learn and pick this game up?
We're talking to longstanding Giant Jason Sehorn. Okay, he faces Bill Belichick's defense tonight. What do you expect Belichick to do to this rookie quarterback? What kind of scheme would he come with?
Something that he hasn't seen, confuse him. I could go back to every game plan with Coach Fox as a defensive coordinator, and we're facing a quarterback with limited experience, and all he wants to do first is disguise everything. Show no pre-snaps. So the young man has to think on the fly. You don't want him to know where he's going before the ball snaps. You want him to try to figure it out while he's taking his drop back. That's the first thing. The second thing you want to do is you want to bring pressure. And good quarterbacks, pressure is easy because when pressure comes, you know, all right, get rid of it here. Here's my hot read. Boom, get rid of it. Well, with a young quarterback, he's got to think, okay, where is my hot read? You know, I mean, you force him to think quickly. You don't give him time to think. So my guess is, I'm not a coordinator, my guess is you'll see a lot of disguise and you'll see a lot of pressure. Things that just, you know, take him out of his comfort zone and make him think. Make him just take that extra second before he can get the ball out of his hands.
Jason, you know the Giants organization well, having played with them for almost 10 years. What are your thoughts on how they handled basically the benching of Eli Manning, which is probably the end of his career? I mean, I understand they've got a first-rounder. You're going to play a first-rounder. Did they do him a disservice by hanging on to him too long? Should he have even been able to be a starter this season, or should they just have cut the ties nicely before?
Yes, let's put this into context. Teams should never be criticized for hanging on too long, okay? They're the ones who usually cut us way before, you know, we think we're done. Mm-hmm. It's us, the player, who has to realize when our time is up. His time was up last year, okay? His time was up the last couple of years. I don't even know when the last time they went to the playoffs. I think it's been 5 years. I mean, I'm not a statistician, but it's been a while. And overall, they had a fantastic run in the early 2000s. I think it was like, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, somewhere in there. They went three or four straight years. They got a couple rings. But what have you done for me lately is what the NFL really means. And lately, he hasn't been that good. And I have great respect for him. I mean, he's been a solid quarterback. But let's just put it into context. Over the last couple of years, he should have known it was time to go. I don't know why he stayed on it. It looked like the last home game, because I was there last year, that last home game. It looked like he was, you know, saying goodbye. I mean, he's taking photos in the field with family and whatnot. I think he hung on too long. But, you know, that's to be expected. No player wants to walk away. No player, you know, usually they want to be told, time for you to go. That's usually how it happens. It's very difficult. Look at Brett Favre. I mean, it's difficult for players, athletes, to just say, okay, I'm done. You have to be told. And so the Giants, you know, hey, they held on to him. They thought he had, you know, a little bit left in the tank, so that's on them.
Now, that's a great context because, you know, you're at this level, everyone is a fierce competitor, and no fierce competitor is going to want to take themselves out if they think they even have a bit left. So looking at, is it time? We've got 42-year-old Tom Brady that is going to be facing Daniel Jones tonight. On Sunday, he was sacked 4 times versus the Redskins. Do you see any cracks in the Patriots? Are we beginning to see anything that could be exposed in the Patriots? And do you think Tom Brady still has what it takes? It sure looks like it.
I mean, based on what I've seen so far this year, they're one of just a couple unbeaten teams. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say that, yes, he's not the most mobile guy, so people can get to him if he doesn't get the ball out quickly. And, you know, maybe their offensive line isn't quite as good as it's been. There's a lot of things you can point at. But It's, I mean, we're really like pulling, you know, hairs here because they're undefeated. I mean, until the Patriots don't make the playoffs, I say keep coming back. As long as you have a quarterback that can get you to the playoffs. Remember, half the league doesn't go to the playoffs. And so it's like when you've got a quarterback that's not just going but winning Super Bowls, six of them, and he's gone eight times, you hold on to that guy. Mm-hmm. That's a big difference between, you know, you as an organization thinking, all right, is it time? I mean, is the writing on the wall? I'm not sure. I can tell you what, from what I've seen, the writing's not on the wall. I just don't know many quarterbacks that look that sharp at 42. I mean, the writing, let's go back to Peyton Manning, for those who can remember his last year when he won that Super Bowl in Denver. Mm-hmm. He was a shell of himself as far as arm strength, right? He couldn't throw the ball very well. They ran it well and had a fantastic defense. He knew Super Bowl, time to go. Tom last year won a Super Bowl. He's like, nope, not time to go. And that's a tough decision to make. But I don't think he's ready to make that decision, or he should have to make that decision.
No, and I'm sure Patriots fans don't want him to make that decision yet. We're talking with Jason Sehorn, former cornerback with the New York Giants, St. Louis Rams, and most importantly, the USC Trojans. Let's talk about those Trojans. My goodness, the Pac-12, they are just beating each other up from top to bottom. How frustrating is it when you see them beat an excellent team like Utah, and then they have that tough loss at BYU, and they're going to their third-string quarterback, and that, oh my goodness, what do you think, Jason, is the biggest reason for their inconsistency this season?
I mean, the injury at quarterback. It's really difficult to put all your eggs in the basket of, you know, Daniels and the entire offseason workout program. He's your number one. He's your number one. First game of the season, he tears his ACL. Like, oh, okay, go to the backup. He comes in, looks good. You know, then he gets dinged. Go to your third string. And I'm not disparaging anybody anywhere, because my whole philosophy is if you can be there with the uniform, you're good enough to play. But I will say this, your third string for a reason, right? All right? Your second string for a reason, because there was somebody better than you. So that means they're now on their third quarterback. So there was two guys better than him that they chose. They're not going to be very successful like that. I mean, that's just the reality of the situation. And, you know, Clay, I don't think Clay's a bad coach at all.
I don't
but
either.
But he's going to be judged based on the way they perform. And it's just they haven't done it. And the whole Pac-10 to me, like, you look at some of the other conferences, Ohio State has been good for forever. I mean, you're hard pressed to find down years. You know, Alabama, there's these programs that have been good for a long time. Oklahoma, but like, look at the Pac-12. Find me a team that is consistently good. Maybe it was Stanford, okay? But no, I mean, and they're just good. They're not great. The Pac-12 hasn't had a dominant team since SC in the early 2000s. Other than that, they do beat each other up because they're all just good teams. There's never that powerhouse that sustains it, you know, for, well, what the other schools are doing.
No, it's a good point, well taken. I mean, the last time we saw a Pac-12 in the college football playoffs was Washington, and that didn't end well.
No.
Fair enough.
They just don't have, I don't know what it is, they just don't have the dominance. Maybe they, you know, do feed off each other. Maybe it's hard recruit. I don't know the reason behind it. All I know is, the SEC is a battleground, right? But Alabama's there every single year. Why is that? Is it just facilities? Because I've been to where the school is, and it's not location.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's like they're doing something right. I know it's coaching, but they get the players. They convince them to come. They put them in the pros. That's not even happening anymore in the Pac-12. So who knows?
Jason Sehorn, thank you so much for joining us here on SB Nation Radio.
Pleasure. Easy enough, guys.
And great to have you.
Thank you.
Take care.
You're listening to First and 10 on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Bob Evans and Blue Emu. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. Here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
One out of four batteries is going to fail this winter. Get yours tested for free during Superstar Battery Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. If it needs to be replaced, O'Reilly has the Superstar battery for you. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Okay, Carla, I've been looking forward to sharing my list this week of risers and fallers with you. When I looked at last Sunday's games, to me it seemed that there were teams that we had anointed who really fell back. And then there were a few that we had almost written off who really ascended. So let me begin with...
I can't wait to see what you got.
All right, well, let me...
You have not shared this with me, so I'm ready.
I have a few secrets from you, though not
yes,
many.
The wizard. Let's hear.
So here are my two risers from last week. One, you will love the Raiders.
Yes!
I mean, really, a few weeks ago...
Sorry, Ron.
With all that Antonio Brown nonsense, I thought the Raiders were sort of done. It was unrecoverable. How does John Gruden put all the pieces back together? How does he keep everyone focused? And they had the big win over the Bears, the Khalil Mack Bowl, the victory, and John Gruden showed his dancing. The Raiders, 3-2, are in the hunt.
And it was in London as well.
Yes.
So they had the travel thing.
And even better.
Boy, it was back-to-back wins for the Raiders against Indianapolis, a very good Indianapolis team, and a good but struggling Chicago Bears team, and zero sacks on David Carr, and the Raiders had 4 sacks on.
Yeah, 0 sacks on David Carr, most notably not a sack by Khalil Mack.
Which is just shocking. You know, I'll tell you, what really makes me, I want all you Gruden haters out there to just admit it.
She's been a Gruden apologist for years, yes.
The guy can coach. I mean, you think about all that was working against him. He's basically is doing this, is stringing together these back-to-back wins without he lost his what was going to be their number one wide receiver for the entire year for the man we don't speak about.
Yes.
Then he lost his starting safety, rookie Jonathan Abrams, game one against the win against Denver on Monday Night Football. And Vontaze Burfict now, his top linebacker for the entire year. So he is doing all of this. He is stringing together 3 wins already for the Bad Boys out of Oakland with what could seemingly have unraveled a team.
Fair enough. They're on my risers list.
Give credit
list.
To Chucky. He's doing it.
Okay.
I'm happy.
My second riser from last week, the Houston Texans. And this is my take on that game. Because they've been frustrating for a few weeks here. They had really poor performances at home. Some
against
devastating
Carolina,
losses.
Against Carolina, Deshaun Watson's worst game.
And lots of criticism about the play calling and clock management by Coach Bill O'Brien.
Yep.
But last week's game, the big one over the Falcons, the 50-plus points on offense, to me it showed what is possible. It was sort of what everybody had hoped could be if you got Will Fuller stretching the field deep, if you allowed Deshaun Watson a lot of protection. That offense was explosive.
0 sacks on Watson and 1 QB hit. Congratulate that offensive line. And if that, I feel like that was kind of the apex of what the Texans can be when everybody comes together and does their part. And, of course, that's not going to happen every week. But you don't have to put up 53 points every week to win. Deshaun Watson also should be noted that he got a perfect passing rating of 158.3. I mean, look at these stats. 28 out of 33, 473 yards and 5 touchdowns. I mean, I'm laughing because these are like something a kid could make up just to look good. And if you're Atlanta, you're saying, wait, we scored 32 points. That should be awesome. But wait, you lost by 21.
Yeah, incredible offensive performance by the entire Texans team. And to have Will Fuller and his speed stretch the field opens up everything else. Hopkins, of course, is fantastic. So, and they've shown the ability to run the ball this year. They may put all those pieces together, but it is a week-to-week league. We'll just have to see if they can sustain this excitement. They're playing a relatively weak Chiefs defense this week. It could be a big-time shootout, Mahomes versus Watson. In fact, let me make this point. This is something that I sort of find frustrating. Remember a couple of weeks ago, the hype was that, well, Lamar Jackson versus Patrick Mahomes, could they be the next Brady and Manning? Are these two young quarterbacks,
NFL MVPs,
Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes, are they going to be the next Brady and Manning that play each other for big games over many years and elite levels? No, no. If you want to go with that kind of hype, it's Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes. They went in the same 2017 NFL draft.
Two picks apart. 10 and 12.
10 and 12. Mahomes at 10. Yep. Watson at 12. That's the matchup. If there's another Brady Manning kind of matchup, it's Watson and Mahomes. It's not Lamar Jackson.
No, and look, you mentioned the Kansas City defense. You know, it's hard to even notice anything when you've got Patrick Mahomes on the field because he's so electric and so dynamic. But the Kansas City defense is ranked 25th in the league, 30th against the run. In the last 3 games, they were bludgeoned for 569 rushing yards. 569.
Yeah, see, to me, they're on my fallers list. We haven't gotten there yet, but they're on that list because I think they've been exposed as a little bit soft. They don't have a tough defense, a defense against the run, and their O-line is a bit porous. And when you put, well, this week, it'll be the Texans' defensive front going against the Chiefs. I think there's an opportunity to put some pressure on Patrick Mahomes, who may well be a little bit hobbled with his ankle, may not be as mobile as he usually is. And recognize, he buys so much time with his mobility and then the ability to see the whole field while he's running, to look downfield while he's scrambling, and then put the ball anywhere, short, deep, across the field.
He's the best. He really is.
It's one thing to be mobile, but it's another thing to have a mobile ability, the ability to get out of the pocket and then hit anybody on the run on any part of the field. And that's what makes him so special. But he will be hobbled a bit this week, and the Texans' front rush is pretty impressive.
It is pretty impressive, and Houston's offense ranks 9th and 10th in rushing. So it will be, it should be a fair matchup, actually, of these two teams. But the Texans are facing a Chiefs team that really doesn't take kindly to losing, and they're not used to it. So there's that that's coming.
All right, so I have the Chiefs on my fallers list after being exposed a little bit for being soft. I've got the Bears as a team that sort of got exposed last week. I mean, remember just a couple of weeks ago, their defense was so good that when Trubisky was injured, everybody said, well, that's okay. They've got Chase McDaniels. He can be the game manager, and their defense can carry them. They're like the 85 Bears. Is this the Bears' best Bears defense? Is this the best defense we've seen in a decade? No, the Bears are exposed.
They're exposed, and you know, Oakland led 17-0 at the half. They were very dominant. Then, in kind of Raider fashion, they had a really hideous third quarter. And Chicago led 21-17 in the fourth quarter. I mean, their 17-point deficit was erased. Could not put it together to finish out that game, which is not an unusual storyline in Chicago. But it also should be noted on the Raiders' end, this is second time this season that Oakland has shut out an opponent in the first half. When is the last time a Raider fan has been able to say that?
Look at her gush over there.
I am all about this today.
All right, absolutely. Another team I've got on my fallers list is the Chargers. Oh, goodness. How could they lose to the Broncos?
Ron
Culver will have to speak for what took place there.
Yeah,
he's grumpy, and I understand. Maybe it's not even worth poking the bear behind the glass. He refuses to speak on this topic. We'll let him lie. Oh, I'll just tell you that
he's coming.
It's a bad day.
It's a bad day. But
it's a bad day. And that was that last Sunday. I can't even begin to describe what happened on that Sunday.
Oh, that was credit the Chargers. Phillip Rivers, we know, is a super upstanding guy. I think he felt really bad for Denver and said, "Here, I want to give you your first win."
No,
you think?
No, probably not.
All right, I'm going to move on then.
Rough day.
Other teams on my falling list is
a lot.
Well, the Dallas Cowboys.
Oh, you got to speak on your boys.
They were 3-0. They're now 3-2, and they looked miserable against the Packers. Now, sure, when the Packers slipped into prevent defense and let the Cowboys move down the field a bit, the Cowboys were able to close the gap. But this was it was 31-3 at one point in that game. Packers, perhaps the most ominous thing that came out of that game was the Packers' ability to run the ball. The Cowboys' rush defense has not been good all year. It's been overlooked as a weakness. You can go back to week one when Saquon Barkley broke off a huge run against the Cowboys' defense. Cowboys' rush defense has not been good. Their gap control has been an issue. And despite having these two young marquee linebackers in Van Der Esch and Jalen Smith, they are really struggling with stopping the run almost every week. And that's something that has to be fixed before anything else can come together. Because, of course, one of the keys to the Cowboys as a whole team is controlling the clock, running Elliott, keeping the ball on their offensive side. And when the tide turns the other way, when the Packers are able to run the ball as they did, it really undermined the Cowboys' offense. The offense didn't get as many touches. They didn't get into a rhythm. And there were some critical turnovers that have, well, the Cowboys are my fallers. I mean, to be 3-2 after starting out 3-0, there's a lot of attention and focus on whether Jason Garrett really has that team ready to play.
Well, and, you know, their 3-0 start was against, you know, sub-500 teams.
Yep.
And the last two consecutive losses against New Orleans and Green Bay, have been against a more formidable opponent. But If it's okay with you, I want to talk to you a little more about your Cowboys. I have some questions for you.
All right, and when we come back, we're going to look at what Jay Gruden's firing. Who's another head coach on the hot seat? Next up on SB Nation Radio.
This is First and 10 on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Bob Evans and Blue Emu. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back, First and 10, the show All Things Football. And when we went to break, we just gone through my risers and fallers in the NFL after last weekend. I'll just refresh the risers, Texans and Raiders, Whee! And the teams that fell, in my mind at least, the Chiefs, the Bears, the Chargers, the Cowboys, and, of course, the Browns, who were once going to win their division on track for the Super Bowl and now just look like a team in disarray at 2-3.
I mean, credit Rex Ryan. At this juncture of the season, five games in, Baker Mayfield does look overrated.
Mm-hmm.
Period. I mean, he really does.
Yeah, their offensive line isn't any good. They had no rhythm last week.
Look at his line. 8 of 22, 100 yards, 2 interceptions, and a fumble for a loss.
Yeah, that's a quarterback rating of a basically zero.
I mean, it is. His QBR is 29.
Okay, there you go. I can do that math. It's not good. And I worry for them that they were built with flash. They had OBJ and Jarvis Landry and Baker
flash.
Mayfield and Nick Chubb, but no real substance up on the line. I mean, that offensive line is weak, and Baker Mayfield, if he's ever going to become something, is going to need a better offensive line than they have today.
Well, Baker Mayfield has had 18 starts since he came into the league. His record is 8-10 in those starts with 22 interceptions.
Mm.
So, you know, I mean, the numbers don't lie. And here's a question I have for you. So Monday night against the 49ers, the 49ers are looking like playoff contenders at this point. And Nick Bosa had a special extra fire as he was an Ohio State Buckeye when Baker planted the flag in the middle of the field. So Nick Bosa, welcome to the NFL. Look at his breakout game. 2 sacks, 1 forced fumble, and 1 fumble recovery. He had a great game.
He just needs to play against the Browns every week.
And he was taunting him. He's like, Baker, you mad, bro? Which is exactly what, Richard Sherman had said to Tom Brady at one point when he was in Seattle. But my question is this. If you're a member of the Cleveland Browns, or let's say you're even Freddie Kitchens because you're like a coach type guy and people respect you, do you say to Baker Mayfield, dude, you just got to dial it back. You just got to win in this league. Or do you say, I like you being brash. I like this attention you bring on yourself. Be this way. Be sassy and fierce and calling out people. And, you know, he's paying for past sins, basically, with the flag plant. And
that was several years ago.
Not shaking hands, which ended up Richard Sherman did admit. Okay, he did shake my hand. I guess you're right. But Baker's, you know, the center of attention surrounding Baker is not around his talent. It's around revenge. How do you coach that?
Well, first of all, I would not like a quarterback who stirs up the enemy that way, who is a trash talker, who has a history like he has. I would not want that in my quarterback. I like the old quiet leadership model, the Deshaun Watson. I'll go back to the Troy Aikmans, even Patrick Mahomes. These guys are solid, rock solid, even-keeled, poised players. Baker, sometimes it seems like he's got an emotional, frenetic nature to him. And the motivation by revenge and the trash talking, I don't think serves him well. The only thing I'll say about Freddie Kitchens and the Cleveland Browns is they knew what they were getting.
Yes, they did.
He was that guy, and they embraced it. And so at this point, when you say, well, what can you do to coach, or what would you say to coach it? I don't know if you can coach a guy to be somebody he's not. That's what you bought, and you got him.
Good point.
And they're going to have to ride that horse and maybe make the best of it. I guess what you could coach is just to remind Baker that everything takes care of itself if he plays well on the field and wins. And you got to win first to be able to trash talk. You don't get to trash talk to win, well, right?
I know.
The reason he could plant the flag at Ohio State is because Oklahoma was really exceptional and Baker Mayfield was on a Heisman Trophy season and they were winning. You just got to shut up and play football. And if you want to get back to trash talking, fine, you can have your day. But right now, the only thing that matters is play on the field. And I hope that he sees that and is self-aware.
Well, he is leading the league in interceptions.
Yes.
So there's that. But you know, what's fascinating is what you mentioned is the trash talking. You don't normally see that from a quarterback. That's not
No, it's not typical. The position for
Can
this.
Can you think of any quarterbacks that did this kind of, that kind of rolled in this way?
That brash, over the top, in your face kind of attitude.
Yeah, who? I can't think of a quarterback.
No, and I'm going to tell you that I think a lot of the reason why you don't see that or have not seen it historically is because of the nature of the position.
True. True. They've already got a target on them.
Yes. Well, that's a great point. I wasn't even thinking of that. One, yeah, don't trash talk because you're a target and you're vulnerable. But two, you have to be poised. You have to be cerebral. You have to play with your mind. You have to dissect a defense. If you're playing linebacker, yes, there's a mind element to it, but you also get to play with a frenetic energy and you get to play with a lot of emotion. You get to run around and smack people. The quarterback's is the position is more cerebral. And thirdly, you have to be the one who goes into a huddle where people are sometimes feeling beat up or concerned or anxious, and you have to be the voice of calm in that huddle. And I don't see that from Baker Mayfield. The quarterback is the guy who has to get everybody aligned and organized, and I don't know that he's that kind of a leader. And that's why I think historically the quarterbacks are the poised, focused, cerebral voices on the team.
Well, and the only one that I was actually thinking when you were saying that, like, you're right, getting them in the huddle, calming down the team. Jameis Winston came to mind last year in a huddle, eating his fingers to get his players.
And you have a problem with that?
Do you remember the line? You could even see, like, in their helmets, they were looking like, what the heck is he doing? And he, you know, also led the league in interceptions. So there's something to that fiery personality. But I would love to ask you, I have a few more Cowboys questions.
Oh, boy. Cowboys were on my list of falling teams this week.
I know. And I know you're all things Cowboys. So I have two big questions for you. So Dak's line on Sunday, 463 yards, two touchdowns. That's fantastic. Three interceptions. Yuck. So first year OC Kellen Moore, young Kellen Moore, former Boise State quarterback, is Dak's offensive coordinator. It has come out that the Saints, the week before the Green Bay game, were studying Boise State tape when Kellen Moore was the quarterback and studying those signals. Kellen Moore uses some of those same signals with Dak, and the Saints were onto it. Do you think that Green Bay was onto that as well? And do you think there's truth to that, that it could actually make a difference in the game?
So I do think it could make a difference in the game. Saints defense almost did seem to know what the Cowboys were going to do, particularly on those run calls. Now, of course, Dak has the ability to change the play at the line, and if he is doing an audible 20% of the time, then picking up hand signals only helps you 80% of the time, but that's still a very nice advantage. Packers may well have done it also. As a Cowboys fan, if the fix is as simple as that, that would be good news, because obviously you can change the signals. You can get that right. There is a chance to talk to Dak through his helmet. So I would love to think that's the heart of the issue, and that's what enabled the Saints and the Packers defense to do so well against the Cowboys. Unfortunately, I think the problems are bigger. I think the problems are going to be, well, they've got to fix that run defense first and foremost, and then they've got to – Dak needs to see the field faster. He needs to make a decision on where to go with the ball faster. If he doesn't have a load of time, if his offensive line doesn't give him a lot of time to throw the ball, he gets in a fluster. He isn't ready. He doesn't know where to go with the ball. And then he made some mistakes. I mean, the turnovers have killed the Cowboys the last 2 weeks. Yes, there have been some fumbles. Amari Cooper bobbled a pass that led to an interception, and Jason Witten fumbled another week ago. But last week, Dak's interceptions, both in the first half and the second half, were critical to the outcome of that game.
So the bigger question is, Jason Garrett, head coach, playing in the last year of his contract with no extension at this point, can Dak and the Cowboys succeed under Jason Garrett? I know it's a tough. That's not easy.
No, it's not easy. But look at the track record of Jason Garrett. It's not that good. It's been very, very mediocre, sort of middle of the pack. I think there's a real risk this Cowboys team sort of finishes 9-7. Maybe if things bounce the right way, 10-6, and they sneak into the playoffs and they get a quick elimination. And then the question will be, is that enough for Jason Garrett to keep his job? Make the playoffs, but not extend into the playoffs. I think the hurdle this year for Jason Garrett is that he needs to get deep into the playoffs. He needs to have a couple of wins in the playoffs. Probably the NFC Championship game is the mark he needs to reach. And at this moment, based on what we've seen, particularly against tougher opponents, I don't know if the Cowboys are going to get there.
Did you like seeing him get a flag for throwing the flag?
Well,
that was kind of funny.
Jason Garrett has been criticized amongst Cowboy fans as just being a clapper. He's always over there just clapping and backslapping guys. And he actually showed some
chutzpah.
Chutzpah. Some finally emotion from Jason Garrett.
No, he did get penalized for it, so maybe he should stick to the clapping. But that I thought that was actually pretty good. I was entertained. He had some emotion. I was glad to see it.
His fiery red hair lit up. No, I mean, that's a frustrating development on the Cowboys.
I'm sorry to have to bring that up to you.
Look, they're 3-2. They'll likely beat the Jets. Then they'll be 4-2. And then they've got a big-time matchup against the Eagles. The NFC East is wide open. The Eagles are not the Eagles of a couple of years ago.
They're not.
And so you could easily envision a scenario where the Cowboys and the Eagles will be neck and neck down the stretch, and the division winner will likely depend upon who wins the head-to-head matchups.
Well, and let's talk about the Eagles for a minute. You look at Philadelphia. They barely beat Washington. They lost to Atlanta, and they needed two defensive touchdowns to beat the Jets.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm not sold on yet. And in Carson Wentz, you know, his receivers, they lead the league in drop passes with 12. So there's a lot to be worked on in Philadelphia.
Now, NFC East is wide open. Certainly, it's probably the Cowboys or the Eagles. I don't see the Giants getting into that race. I want to ask you, back to the NFC East. Of course, the Redskins fired Jay Gruden this week. Mm-hmm. And first of all, I loved his brother's quote, John Gruden. He said, well, welcome to the family. Because, of course, John Gruden noted that his father had been fired, John has been fired, and now Jay has been fired. And that's just the nature of the beast and the jobs they're in. Redskins positioned, wide open, not clear whom they're going to hire. Rex Ryan has raised his hand. He said he would take the job, which I think shows just how elite and rare head coach openings are. Even for a bad situation, going in under Daniel Snyder, someone's going to want that job. It is the Redskins. There's a long history there. Rex Ryan's raised his hand.
I would love to see Rex Ryan back. I really would. Although he's great in the booth.
You like him in the booth. You
I
like
really
him on the
do.
Show, yes.
Hey, he is right. I mean, he makes bold statements, and he is usually right. But you are very right that there are 32 plum jobs in the NFL, and it doesn't really matter what team you're on, Brian Flores, you're still a head coach in the NFL, and you can get recycled. I mean, that's something that they actually do. I think in Washington, it's a tricky situation because it's a culture issue, some sort of a culture from the top down that just they have too many – they should be – a lot better than they are. And they're playing in the nation's capital. They're playing America's game. Get it right, Dan Snyder and Bruce Allen.
Well, one thing they have to get right, you mentioned Brian Flores, is this weekend's matchup. It's a funny game.
The basement dweller.
It's the Dolphins and the Redskins. This is the Tua Bowl. This is a big deal.
Is it the Tua Bowl? If you're Washington and you took Dwayne Haskins where you took him in the first round, do you want Tua? Or well, do you need to see what happens with Haskins this season?
Yeah, they really need to evaluate him this year, give him some chances, and this would be the week to me to start him. I mean, play
this
the Dolphins. Haskins out there. Let's start to see what he has. I mean, if the Redskins, I guess the ideal situation is Haskins proves to be a good quarterback, but the Redskins get the number one pick, and then they could trade back and get a bounty of extra picks along the way. I think that the problem there, of course, is if Haskins proves that he's actually pretty good, the Redskins will start to win some games and they won't have the number one pick. That scenario didn't play out. But this weekend, I mean, you mentioned Brian Flores. Brian Flores right now, if I were Brian Flores, I would much rather be the defensive coordinator of the New England Patriots than the head coach of the Miami Dolphins. But he did take that opportunity to be a head coach in the NFL. One of those rare 32 spots. He jumped on it.
And an African-American head coach, which is also notable.
The question, does he have any assurance from Dolphin ownership that they're going to sort of ride him through this year of tanking? Are they going to tolerate this rugged window for a better future.
Well, I sure hope they do, and I would imagine they do, because Brian Flores is a class guy, a very talented guy, and he just doesn't have the talent to work with at the moment.
All right, when we come back, we'll wrap up the show with our final look at this weekend's games. You're listening to First and 10 on ESPN Nation Radio.
You're listening to First and 10 on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Bob Evans and Blue Emu. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. Here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back, First and 10. And I am looking forward to this Patriots-Giants matchup tonight. But I want to look ahead to Sunday. What matchup do you really like? What are you going to see this week?
Well, my Raiders have a week off for their big win over Chicago. So I am looking at a game against two division rivals on opposite trajectories, San Francisco at the LA Rams.
You call them on – no, those are – well, you opposite trajectories.
You say
the Rams are going down.
Yes, I do, because look at this. The Rams are coming off two consecutive losses. It was a Monday night loss against Seattle, 30-29, and a 55-point beatdown at the hands of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And San Francisco is coming off a big win, Monday Night Football against Cleveland. They're 4-0. Did you hear me? 4-0. The last time they were 4-0, Joe Montana was under center throwing to Jerry Rice. So you look what's going on with the Rams. Aaron Donald has one sack. Todd Gurley's out of the top 15 in rushing. And Jared Goff is not even in the top 25 passer rating.
Fair enough. All right, I'm going to go with the next Brady Manning matchup, Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes.
Woo,
big
good.
Time. Brian Barrett coming up next here on SB Nation Radio.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.